May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have 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 your attention, please?
This is Attention Please, in which each week we will draw your attention to some of the enriching opportunities, events, people, and services on offer on this amazing peninsula we call home. I'm Steve Evans, and this week I am talking with Connie Gallant, the amazing quill scene-based environmental activist who was recently awarded this year's Eleanor Stops Environmental Leadership Award, the 13-year-old honor named after the driving force behind the preservation of Protection Island as a wildlife refuge bestowed annually by the Port Townsend Marine Science Center upon someone whose work reflects Stops' spirit, which your work and that of your recently deceased husband, J.D. Gallant, certainly does, Connie. So, I read in the newspaper that you and J.D. moved to Quill Scene about 4 decades ago, just as Protection Island was made a national wildlife refuge. So did you get to know Eleanor Stops?
I met Eleanor at the Jefferson County Historical Society for the first time several years ago when I was giving a talk on heroines of the Olympic Peninsula. And she was in the audience along with two of the ladies that I featured in my talk, Polly Dyer and Bonnie Phillips. And so later, Eleanor came up and we introduced ourselves and we started talking. And it was like almost environmental soulmates. We really discussed a lot of issues and she was incredible. She was so delightful. And I wish that I had met her before, but, you know, life gets in the way, you get involved with projects and so forth. And these things don't tend to happen, but at least afterwards, I was able to meet with her a couple of other times. And we again discussed issues on, you know, marine wildlife. And I was present when the awards ceremony, I believe it was at the Northwest Maritime Center. There was some other functions and she was present. And so that was lovely. But I wish that I had met her a decade before or even when we first moved here, when she was involved in the Protection Island efforts, because I would have certainly jumped in and tried to help a little bit, even though at that time I would have been considered a very, what's the word I'm looking for, a novice in environmental issues.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. Back in, we moved here in 82, and it wasn't until, you know, I kept seeing all of these trucks, logging trucks going by, I mean, by the dozens daily. And we, having moved from California, we really were not too aware of the situation here, the forest situation on the Olympic Peninsula. And then we decided to go up to the top of Mount Walker one time, and we looked out on the western side of it, and we were shocked to see all the bald spots on the mountains on the Olympic Range. And that's when I realized there's something going on here that should not be, you know, should not be happening. And at that time, I was not really aware either of any thinning type of issues on the forest. And all I saw was basically scorched earth, you know, type of situations, clear cuts. And then we started noticing the sediments running into the bays and creeks and so forth. And that's when I became very concerned and started learning more about it.
So I gather that prior to this experience, you actually were not an environmental activist. I was going to ask you, like, how out of what did your activism arise?
Well, it actually arose when JD and I worked at a lodge in the Sierra Mountains in California. And we were at the 7,000 foot level. And when we first got there, there was snow all over the place and it looked like you know, paradise. It was just wonderful. And I started seeing the effects that some development was having on the area. And it caught my attention, the fact that some of the people were also concerned about their village and the effects that not only logging, but overhunting or fishing was having in their livelihood. But we were very, very busy working on this lodge and practically 24/7. And so we did not have much time to get involved in other activities outside of the lodge. And so it wasn't until we arrived here in Quilcene, then everything sort of came into focus. And I began reading more about it and studying it, because when we lived in California, again, we were too busy with life, you know, working, trying to get ahead, saving money, you know, that type of thing, so that we could eventually leave and go somewhere where we could buy a property and live outside the city. So it was by pure coincidence, really, that we landed in Quilcene, because we were headed towards Kitsap County. We had heard that was lovely, and then we came up this way and ended up here. And so that's when really I began observing the damages that our environment was going through by many of the issues, not only logging, but again, you know, hunting and overfishing and so forth.
So how did you start? I mean, what did you do? I mean, how did you say, I'm going to fix this by doing, what did you do?
Okay. Well, that is a very interesting story. When we lived here and in Quilcene, and then the Forest Service announced that they were going to be logging Mount Walker. Now, Mount Walker is basically our backyard. I can just look out the window and see it. And so I was horrified, because I had already seen the effect that clear cutting had in other areas of the peninsula in the Olympic Mountain Range. And I said, good God, there's no way. They're not going to do that. They're not going to get away with it. And so I mobilized a lot of the folks in Quilcene and started doing research. And before I knew it, I had like 200 people on this list of locals who did not want to see a bald Mount Walker. And, you know, that was their view as well, or they loved it for whatever, you know, their personal reasons. And so I attended a meeting that the Forest Service had on Mount Walker. And on that meeting, I was incredibly fortunate to meet Tim McNulty, as well as Jim, his last name escapes me. But anyway, he was part of Olympic Forest Coalition at that time. And I went ahead right after that meeting and I developed this website, since I had already learned how to do websites. And this is not the WordPress drag and drop that we have today. That was with the HTML language and everything. But anyway, so I developed this website and I called it SaveMyWalker.org. And I notified all of the people on my list to go there and to write to Congressman Norm Dix, who was our representative at the time, and to the Forest Service chief and everyone. And people just jumped on it, and they did it. They started writing. And then Olympic Forest Coalition Executive Director Bonnie Phillips contacted me and wanted to meet with me, and eventually said that, you know, the entire board, they were very impressed with the website, and if I would do them a huge favor and do update their website, because it was a little bit outdated. So I said, sure. And she said, well, for that to happen, we would love to have you on the board. You don't have to do anything now. All you need to do is just a website. You can attend meetings just to learn what we do and so forth, but you don't have to believe me. You don't have to write anything. And so I said, oh, okay, well, that sounds fine. Well, a few years later, I found myself voted as vice president of OFCO. And then for about 10 years now, I have been its board president. And so Bonnie did me a great favor in one way, but in another way, boy, you know, she just really lured me in and she knew how to do it. And so, but anyway, the end result of that was that Olympic Forest Coalition became very involved with the Mount Walker issue as well. And then we had public meetings at, here in Quilcene, and everyone, you know, each person that was on my list came to the meetings and they spoke up against the logging. And sure enough, the Forest Service dropped it. And so that was basically, it was not my win, it was everyone's win. You know, the entire town and Olympic Forest Coalition and Olympic Park Associates that Tim McNulty was involved in and is still involved in. But, you know, he lent his knowledge and great oratory skills to the argument. And so that was a success. So that I felt very good about that. And that really gave me the momentum to continue. And I said, okay, I like this. I like helping out. I like helping the community, and particularly when it's something that we can actually save and protect for us and for future generations. So that's how it all kind of came about.
So tell me about the genesis of the Wild Olympics campaign.
Okay. Well, the Wild Olympics campaign really was a combined effort of several people and several organizations. Initially, the Olympic Forest Coalition, Olympic Park Associates, Olympic Audubon, and the North Olympic Group of the Sierra Club, we got together and we were discussing ways in which we could extend protections to wilderness and rivers. And immediately we sought out the assistance and knowledge of the larger organizations. And so very, very soon thereafter, we started having meetings with representatives from the National Sierra Club, from the Mountaineers, American Whitewater, American Rivers, Washington Wild, and the Pew Environmental Group. And so we discussed the possibilities of not only protecting wilderness, but also including the rivers on the Olympic Peninsula to become part of the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. That way they would be protected forever from, you know, any development, dams, and so forth. And so it became very obvious that we would have a uphill climb to overcome a lot of the objections to it. But Congressman Dix and Senator Patty Murray were immediately on board once we made the proposal. And initially it was going to be, oh gosh, I want to say over 200,000 acres. That included about 3,000 acres in the perimeter of the Olympic National Park. But the folks, timber companies and so forth, immediately started complaining about that. And then once it went to the Senator Murray's office and Congressman Dick's office, they began to also seek out feel the waters, so to speak, from the locals. And they determined that the addition of the park lands would probably not fly. And so that was taken out, most unfortunate, but we felt, well, perhaps that's for another day. And now the when Congressman Dix retired, Representative Derek Kilmer, of course, replaced him, and we immediately started showing him the proposal. And I remember that we went to his office and handed him a binder that was at least 4 inches thick with pictures, letters, proposals, and so forth. And much to his credit, he studied every single page of it and looked at every single page and then came back with many excellent questions. So we knew that.
I remember that. And he actually went out around the Olympic Peninsula and talked with all of the stakeholders, including opponents and so on, and made quite a...
Yes, he did. Yes, yeah, he did.
And an investigation.
So, yeah. So it was great. And he, his support and Senator Murray's, who has been just an incredible champion on not only environmental issues, but on many other issues, their efforts and their commitment to it has been absolutely wonderful. So we're very proud of that.
So right now, that the latest version of that bill has passed the House, right? And it's before the Senate. So tell me a little about the status, and I don't know what your perception is of things people might do to help the legislation.
Well, we were, of course, delighted that it passed the House. And all I can tell you, Steve, is that all of us are holding our breath for a Senate bill to be discussed and passed. And it was, as you know, it was sort of, our bill was wrapped up in the National Defense Act. And whether or not it stays there or, you know, is taken out, we don't know. So I honestly wish I could tell you more. I wish I could give you better news, but I can't, because we're all waiting to find out what the next step is going to be. We hope that it is heard this year, somehow that it is heard and it passes. But if not, then we'll have to go at it again next year.
It sounds like you intend to persist. Well, so we're gonna run out of time here, but there was one other thing I wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned this morning when I talked to you that you are going to be making a presentation before the state Supreme Court tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Our Olympic Forest Coalition attorneys will actually be doing the argument, and it's against the state DNR. And it's going to be a very interesting case. And so I can say no more than that, Steve. I'm sorry.
Oh, you can't tell us what the subject is?
Oh, well, sure. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. So basically the subject is that it centers on the interpretation of one of the articles of the Washington State Constitution that states, and allow me to just read this, that all the public lands granted to the state are held in trust for all the people. And so since timber production and associate revenue for beneficiaries, carbon management, promoting climate stability, and protections of clean water, species and habitats, and against landslides and floods during extreme weather events, regrowth of older complex forests for future generations, as well as non-timber forest products, cultural value, and recreation. All of those are on the line, so to speak, to be discussed. And the attorneys will argue that that it is for the benefit of all the people to retain all of that in place. So that's, in essence, what it's about.
Well, thank you very much, Connie, for taking the time today, and congratulations again on winning the award, and of course, condolences once again on JD's loss. I know that he was very much your partner in every respect, including in your activism over the years, and I know that he's much missed.
Yes, he was, and yes, he is. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate the time.
All right. With 2021 Eleanor Stopp's Environmental Leadership Award winner Connie Gallant, this is Steve Evans for Attention Please and KPTZ Community Radio News.
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?